Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Robots Radio presents.
You're listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast, the best way for everyone from experienced dungeon masters to those curious about D&D to learn more about the worlds, creatures, and lore of Dungeons & Dragons.
Well, welcome to episode 7D of the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. I am your host, Almighty Crit, and joining me as my co-host, Sergio.
Hello, world. Hello, all you Dungeons & Dragons fan, all you Dungeoneers and Dragonites out there.
Yes! So, Sergio.
Yeah.
I tinkered around the tower a little bit.
Yeah, I've heard you making weird noises, and I always ask, "Well, what are you doing over there?" And you're just like, "Mind your own."
Mind your business.
That's the sort of living situation we found ourselves in now.
But I do want to say that I did take some inspiration from a good old fashioned character in our homebrew game, Tariff, and I found magical ooze that can transform into any instrument. So it was pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
That's what you heard last night.
Oh, that banging and clacking and strumming.
Yep.
Nice.
Thanks, Tara.
You're starting your own noise core band?
I am. Nice. So, I think what people really want to hear is us dive into Arakocras. What do you think?
The Arakocras, the bird folk of Dungeons & Dragons. This isn't a new race by any means. This is a race that has its origins in the 80s. But as far as being a widely playable race, that is a fairly recent development in Dungeons & Dragons.
And I applaud Wizards of the Coast for doing so, because it was long overdue.
I mean, it's something that we'll get into. We'll get into the actual mechanics of the character here in a little bit, but it's divisive for sure. Like, some DMs will not have it. And in fact, the Adventures League has banned the race from games. And mainly because of the flight ability, mainly because of the ability to fly. Some argue that it makes it, as the gamers like to say, OP or overpowered.
Wait, aren't we gamers?
I mean, as you know, but as gamers are known to say, you know, I don't want to say OP and then have someone think like, I don't know what that means. And I don't want to say overpowered and be like, yeah, you could have just said OP. So I'm going to go both ways. I'm going to try to have my cake and eat it too.
No, Sergio. But I will say, it was disappointing to hear that Adventures League was going to not allow it as a race, but I do understand. I do understand. It is a little OP being able to fly above the battle. And I mean, could you imagine dropping arrows left and right while flying above enemies that can't fly or don't have long range? I mean, you'd be picking off people left and right.
I mean, and that's something that we'll get into when we talk about how to build a possible Arakocra. Different classes you could use, and the pros and cons of those. But so the basics of the Arakocra is that they are essentially what you would consider like a bird person to look like. It's like a giant anthropomorphic bird. They're known as bird folk. Sky Hunters, Featherheads. I think the Featherheads is probably something that's someone who isn't really a fan of the Aarakocra might call them.
A slur term, if you will.
A bit, yeah. Like would you call me? Like, okay, oh, sorry. But they are originally from the elemental plane of air.
Mm-hmm.
Their mythic origins, I couldn't really find anything like hammered down. The best I could come up with is that they are sort of created in the image of a deity known as Croka,
mm-hmm.
who's like a avian bird god sort of deity. Although there's another deity known as Sinranita, some sources indicate that Sinranita is replaced Croka, but in homebrew or in any, like, even if you're running a regular campaign, like, why not use both? When it comes to deities, I feel that's the most malleable of the mechanics to use. You can mm-hmm. be like, well, I want to go ahead and this deity from the Eberron campaign, I want to use it in the Forgotten Realms campaign and just run it by your DM. And then to me, that shouldn't be too much of a problem.
No.
But they're sort of like two halves of the same coin. Croka is more like hunter based. He's touted as the creator, and he fashioned them, the Aarakocra, sort of as evolved eagles.
Mm-hmm.
And he himself is an eagle with golden wings and a deep scarlet head, like plumage, like feathers, which is why he gets the name the Crimson Feather. He is directly connected to the elemental plane of air. And so obviously he's worshipped by the Aarakocra because he's considered the all father of their race.
Mm-hmm.
Sinranita is sort of the all mother protector and the mate to Croka. As the myth goes, she actually raised him to godhood so that she could abide with her love with him forever. And then of course, like, you know, with any sort of myth or legend, there's half truths. There's truths, half truths, and just downright lies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it would seem strange to have, you know, one god raise another god and then willingly have themselves replaced by that god.
Yeah.
But whereas Croka is more like, the portfolio is hunting, combat. Sinranita's is more like home arts, and so education, protection. Mm-hmm. So more like cleric than ranger fighter. So let's get into the basics of the race. So you get a +2 to dexterity, which is huge.
Oh, huge. Yeah.
And a +1 to wisdom. Aarakocras are fairly slight. Their actual like body composition is very much like our actual birds. Like they're very fragile and have hollow bones. About 5 feet tall, anywhere from 80 to 100 pounds. Their walking speed is actually 25 feet. So it's slightly less than most of the beginning races, most being 30 feet, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, that flying speed is going to be, and Thanatos like, oh, so you could effing fly? Like, that's the only thing people care about. Yeah. I mean, this section isn't going to be very in depth because so you have a flying speed of 50 feet, but you have to be wearing either no armor at all or light armor. They can't fly in medium or heavy armor.
Yeah, which makes sense because of their bone density and their builds and their small,
skinny little bones. And then their talons can be used as a natural weapon. It's a slashing damage, 1d4 plus their strength modifier. And that's pretty much it. as far as like racial traits are concerned.
So I want to bring one thing up.
Bring it up. Go ahead.
So what I find really interesting about the Arakocra is the fact that they reach maturity at the age of 3 years
old. Like I'm three a full grown Arakocra. Yes. Let's go.
However, they also expire usually around 30 years old. So you got a good, by the time you reach adulthood as an Arakocra, you got a good, what, 27 years? Most adventurers really reach their peak at right around 10.
Yeah.
So middle-aged as an Arakocra, pretty much that's when you're going to reach your, you know, your beginning of adventurehood. That's when you're going to really reach your peak. So most of these Arakocra, I'm sure, don't become true legends before they die.
Well, I mean, that's that has a lot to do with the fact that, like, traditionally talking is hard. They enjoy peace and solitude. They sort of like keep to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's sort of a in-game reasoning for why you wouldn't see too many Arakocras, because they don't really become the adventuring type.
Yeah. Well, and it also says in the book and in the notes that we've read that adventuring ones typically go to more of a chaotic alignment. So they're not really wanting to be tied down to the lifestyle of everybody else anyway. So that's why it makes sense for them to journey out.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, and it says a lot of them are good aligned characters or creatures.
Yeah. Well, it's because of their sort of like their mythology, their legends. And so the main legend behind the Arakocra and most that become adventurers are they have some kind of tie to the Wind Dukes of Aqua, also known as the Vati, who are the lords of the elemental plane of air where the Arakocra hail from.
Mm-hmm.
And so they honor those ties by seeking out missing pieces of the Rod of Seven Parts. Now, the Rod of Seven Parts, very cool story. So way back in the gap, back in the day, the forces of law are battling against the forces of chaos at the dawn of time.
Yes.
You know, this is for control of the cosmos, for all the tea in China, all the cheese in Wisconsin. This is for all the Mountain Dew in my fridge. This is for everything.
It's a lot of Mountain Dew.
A lot of Mountain Dew. I just picked up 2 12 packs of Thrashed Apple. Wow, it's fantastic. So Miska the Wolf Spider is leading the forces of the Chaos Army, and the Vati, the Wind Lords, they're heading up the Law faction, like the Law and Order side, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they're battling at the dawn of time for control of the cosmos. And the Vati realize that they're outnumbered and outgunned, and so they fashion a powerful weapon known as the Rod of Seven Parts, which could kill, like theoretically, they say this has enough power to kill Miska in one blow. So at the Battle of Pesh, they're going at it, they're squabbling. Their battle is to a standstill, but the forces of law are almost wiped out. And in desperation, one of the Vati strikes Miska with the rod. But instead of killing the wolf spider, it simply imprisoned Miska for eternity in the abyss.
Ooh, that had to hurt.
So, yeah, so this ends up fracturing time and space. And it creates the multiverse as we now know it, you know, where order and anarchy are constantly at odds and trying to beat one another for complete control. And so the legend goes that the fate of the multiverse and, you know, everything in between is in the hands of whoever wields the Rod of Seven Parts, because they could either use it to rule the multiverse, so they could use it to free Miska from Abyss.
Mm-hmm.
And so then Miska would control the multiverse, right? And so when it struck Miska, the chaos inside of Miska's blood, inside of its spirit, inside of its aura, it was too much for the rod to handle. So it broke up into seven parts, and it was spread all over the multiverse, all over. And so that's sort of the hook for the adventure, mm-hmm. is finding the first part, and then it will want to be sort of like the One Ring in Lord of the Rings, yep. and like wanting to get back to its master. The rod wants to get put back together. And so you find the first part, and it'll like sort of pull you towards the next to seek out the next. So that's a big reason why some Arakocra would do the adventuring, live the adventuring lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Another one would be beefing with gargoyles. Arakocra. Yeah. All right, so if Arakocra are born to be kings and princes of the universe, to borrow a term from Queen and Highlander, or not just the universe, but of the elemental plane of air, then gargoyles are that, but for the plane of earth. Mm-hmm. And they squabble tough. They are like cats and dogs, essentially.
Oh, yeah.
And in fact, Arakocra, their word for gargoyle translates to flying rock. Yeah.
So, yes.
So there is absolutely like zero chill when it comes to gargoyles for the Arakocra.
Arakocra, like, nah, you no, get that yeah, flying rock. Get him out of here.
No, like they're not letting them make it at all. Not a single bit.
No.
That would be a very cool sort of dynamic within a campaign, is having one gargoyle, one Arakocra, and sort of having them like bicker back and forth.
You know, thinking about the rod and the story between the gargoyles and the Arakocra, I think a really interesting campaign would be to give the party one of the pieces and have the gargoyles protecting another piece. Like just a little piece of the story, having like a camp, for lack of better words, of gargoyles, yep. that is guarding the second piece. Like, I think it would make a very, very excellent role playing and very excellent campaign.
No, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you could play it any number of ways. You also co-hosting the Resident Evil Lorecast. You're familiar with the fact that there are some items in that game
yep.
that are useless unless you combine them with another item.
Bingo.
And so they could have, the gargoyles could have this piece of the rod, mm-hmm. but it's completely useless until it attaches to another piece. It's to them, it's just some like ornate, like paperweight.
Yeah. Yeah. It's. Oh.
Yeah, but
makes my DM bones chill.
And so the Arakocra show up, you know, with already a piece in hand, knowing, you know, mm-hmm. what lies in store for them. And the gargoyles are like, no, we're not going to, like, just on general principle, just on GP, like, yeah. no, we're not going to give you this. Like, we don't care if we think it's worthless. Like, if you want it so bad, it must have some worth. So no, we're not going to give it to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, exactly. It makes, like I said, it'll make for great role play.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so as far as like creating a character is concerned, like I say, like it's the flight aspect is really mm-hmm. I feel like in making this a playable character, like Wizards of the Coast only like, you know, wanted to like that. They felt like that was enough yeah. appeal.
Yeah.
Because there's really not much in the way of racial traits. Like I said, mm-hmm. they have, they can use their talons as a natural weapon, and they've got a +2 to dex and a +1 to wisdom. And beyond that, like that's it, but they can fly. I mean,
yeah, 50 feet around or a turn. Like, and that's ridiculous.
And flight for, and Thanatos, mentions in the chat, it's the race that every DM hates. And that's why they're so divisive, because they can seem OP if the DM doesn't really know mm-hmm. how to throw something their way to challenge them.
Yes.
If you're doing your basic goblins and kobolds and what have you, like Arakocra is going to have a field day with that stuff. And just take them out easily.
And see, they, they've introduced in the newer books, they've introduced flying kobolds.
Oh, nice.
Yes. And they've also introduced vampire kobolds, which nightmares. They are nightmares. But these, again, are things you could throw to challenge your Arakocra player or players.
No, yeah, exactly. And that's the whole appeal of any sort of game, but especially about D&D. Like, mm-hmm. you want to make it challenging enough that the players don't feel as if they can get away with anything. But you don't want to make it too challenging that the players feel like you're just going to TPK them. You're just going to party kill them.
Yeah.
Like, it's a fine balance between making it challenging enough so that they can solve the problem either through combat or non-combat,
mm-hmm.
and have a great time.
Sometimes it's okay to fudge the numbers, DMs. It's okay to fudge the numbers.
I mean, in terms of telling a great story, like, yeah, sometimes, mm-hmm. sometimes fudging the numbers is the right choice and sometimes it isn't.
So, Sergio, I think it might be time to do a mid-break transition to talk about the new minis and our DMG corner.
Let's go talk about stuff like that.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. And then when we come back, we should discuss how to make some characters.
How to build a Birdman.
Birdman. All right, let's go to our mid-break.
Hello, this is Charlie Transmutation coming to you with another PSA announcement.
No, Charlie, this is a commercial.
What? Crap. Nobody told me that. Well, what are you supposed to do in this thing anyway?
Well, Charlie, I'm glad you asked. This is the part where we introduce our new homebrew 5e D&D podcast, The Fumbling Four and the Almighty Crit, where we explore the homebrew world of Altaris using homebrew rules and homebrew material from the Dungeon Masters Guild.
Sounds boring. I'm out of here.
See you later, Charlie. We hope to have you guys come check us out soon. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. All right. So here we are in the middle of the show. It's very middly in here.
So middly. Not beginning-y
like
or endy.
Yeah, but very but middly.
Really middly.
So today, for our middle of our show, we got to start it with obviously thanking our patrons. Do you want to do the honor, Sergio, or should I?
We can both do it.
All right.
We can both thank them.
All right. I'll start. So we first want to thank our scholar patrons. We have Wolf the Sheepdog and we have Remington Cloutier.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. For our wizards, we have Chris Mitchell, Jonathan Sutter, and Stagger and Stumble.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'll let you introduce the rest.
Well, we've got two deities, two people that we worship. They are Jared Bush and Lupus Malum.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they have access to our monthly campaign, mm-hmm. that Crit's putting together.
Yes.
I'll be playing in. And we'll also have, you know, until we have a full party, this tier is capped at 5. So only 5 people get to play in the monthly game. Until we get a full party, we'll have special guests filling in the, mm-hmm. roles.
Yep.
But yeah, if we want to, again, we want to thank everyone who is, who has supported us.
Yes.
Anyone who is supporting us by listening, by telling their friends.
Yes.
By spreading the word. Like, if you're not able, mm-hmm. to support the Patreon, just spreading the word about the show is more than enough. Is more than we could ask for.
Yep.
But if you can throw a few dollars our way, there, we're trying to make it worth your while for sure.
Big time. Yeah.
So for $5, you get any number of things. You get early access to the shows.
Yep.
For sure. So you'll get the show the next day as opposed to 2 days later.
Mm-hmm.
You'll also get ad-free episodes. You get a sticker pack, which the stickers are posted on the D&D Lorecast channel, text, yep. channel of the Robots Radio Discord. You'll be able to submit fan topics. So if you want to hear us talk about a certain topic, we'll put that in a fishbowl and we'll pick topics every so often.
Yep.
You'll get a shout out, obviously. We'll have stretch goal bonuses. Like, so let's say at once we reach 100 patrons, we'll do something fun and wacky and you'll be able to access that.
Yeah.
At the $10 tier, for those of you, the two of you guys at the $10 tier, you'll have an exclusive sticker, which will be the logo that, I don't know if you'd be able to see it right here. It's the what I'm pointing to.
It's the other side, Sergio. This one.
Whatever.
Right here.
There you go. The sticker right here.
The new Dungeons and Dragons designed. Logo.
I will be sending that out. If you're on the $25 tier, you get to chat with us at the end of the month. We'll have our monthly patron chat. That's
soon.
Yeah, everything that was around before is still here, plus a lot more.
Yeah, there's a ton. We'd probably take up half the show just talking about it.
For sure.
Go check it out.
go to patreon.com/dndlorecast and see all the cool swag that you can get from us.
Swag. Speaking of our D&D campaign, I'm going to be beginning with our deity patrons here soon. And I think this campaign is going to be exploring Dragon's Reach in Altaris and trying to discover what happened to the dragons.
Nice. Very cool.
But let's start talking about the new D&D mini releases, shall we? I'm excited about this.
You are a man who loves his minis.
Yup. So the first one I'm going to show, Lupus Malum has actually brought up in our Discord before, and I've been waiting patiently to show this one because I saw it a long time ago and I was like, oh, because this thing is awesome. So we're going to bring it up here on our little Twitch stream for everyone to see. This is an adult emerald dragon. Now, this thing is sick looking. And for those of you who collect minis, we're talking it's probably going to be about the size they're talking about it. It's going to be about the size of the, I always mess up the name on this, the Chartan dragon from the Icewind Dale release. So it's going to be massive. It's going to be a big dragon. I actually have somewhere in here that dragon. I can show you the size in a bit.
And for those listening later on,
yes,
we'll have pictures of these on our Discord.
Yep. Actually, that one's already on the Discord, thanks to Lupus.
Thanks, Lupus.
So that is our emerald dragon, and it doesn't really need any explanation. It's an emerald colored dragon. It's very shiny. Yep. The next three. The Emerald Dragon is going to be released in November of this year. So it's coming soon. The next three won't be released. Unfortunately, right now they are scheduled to release in December. But these are some pretty gnarly ones. And I'll bring the first one, which is Zariel from the Descent into Avernus campaign. She is getting a sick looking mini. And if you haven't played Descent into Avernus, I highly recommend it. It is a killer campaign and Zariel is savage.
That looks badass.
Yes.
Think of a demonic looking angel with like black and fire wings.
The easiest way I've found to explain it is think of Nosferatu with a fiery halo and lava wings, like lava angelic bat wings.
There you go. Lava wings.
Lava wings. So that is Zariel. The next we're going to bring up is the Archdevil Ball. Now, this is pretty exciting. Ball's had minis in the past, tons, but none of them is quite as detailed as this one. So it is, for those of you who don't know who Ball is, the easiest way to explain him is he's pretty much a minotaur. He's pretty much a minotaur.
Yeah. Evil minotaur.
He's just savage looking. I mean, just look at the detail and those skulls on his belt. Ugh. I'm going to buy them immediately.
Immediately.
And the last one we got is the Archdevil Bell, which is it was discussed in a previous episode of the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast from Stuart and Tom. And he's basically a pit fiend. And yep. For those of you who don't know what a pit fiend is, it's simplest way to explain it is what you would think of when you think of a low-level demon. Like, when you think of demon, you think horns and sharp teeth and wings, giant leathery bat wings.
He may be a low-level demon, but he looks like the king of hell. Like, yes. He looks absolutely terrifying. He's got severed heads as a belt,
mm-hmm.
a fire sword.
Yes.
This dude looks like one bad ace customer.
Yeah. And he ain't nothing to mess with in the D&D campaigns.
He's the right one. If you mm-hmm. want to fight, he's the right one.
He's the one. But yes, that's what we have coming to us here soon. Those three will be releasing in December, and the Emerald Dragon will be releasing in November. I'm pretty stoked for all of them. I'm going to buy them all.
Yeah, again, if you're listening to this after the fact and not watching on Twitch, definitely check out the Discords, the
yes.
Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast text channel on the Robots Radio Discord, and we'll be posting pictures of all four of those pretty awesome minis. I don't have the talent of painting miniatures, and that makes me wish that I did. Look at that guy.
See, this is for you at Twitch. This is the size comparison to my head. I mean, this thing is
about the size of, and you've got a pretty big dome.
I do.
Like you've got a big old melon. You've got a big old melon, and that's going to be the size of the Emerald Dragon.
That's supposedly. We'll see.
Okay.
It could be smaller. I don't foresee it being much smaller.
But I mean, it's by no stretch like a mini. When you think of a mini, you think of something that's two or three inches, couple inches mm-hmm. tall.
Yep.
It's a full on figure. It's pretty big.
Yeah. You're definitely going to get your money's worth out of it. But I'm done with my mini releases. Sergio, would you like to take the floor for our DMG's corner?
So I was perusing the stacks at the DM's Guild, trying to find something Aarakocra related. And I found a couple of items that were really cool. And I'm going to highlight them both because they're only $1 a piece.
Oh, yeah.
And one of them is Ayanuden, the Tower of Mists, which is a third to fifth level adventure. And it's it looks like you can plug it in to a pre-existing campaign, or you can run it as a one shot.
Ooh.
But the introduction is that the party is approached by a tribe of the Aarakocra. They seek help in freeing the temple of Ayunaden from a mist elemental, which has taken over the temple in a bloody battle and corrupted many of their kin into a cult of the Pazazu. And so it's essentially a dungeon crawl. It's a good old fashioned dungeon crawl.
Which, we miss those.
No, I mean, it's when all else fails, do a dungeon crawl. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, it's $1. It's 99 cents. Like I said, you can fit it into a pre-existing campaign, or you can run it as a one shot.
Yeah,
and it comes with a recommend. The second. The second piece of content that we want to highlight is Autobahn's Guide to the Aarakocra Subraces. Now, what this gentleman or gentle person, nerd metal, is who wrote it.
Okay.
It's written much like Volo's Guide to Monsters or Xanathar's Guide to Everything. It's written as if it's a in-universe character.
Yep.
Writing about stuff that they see and record, and that character is Autobahn, which is play on words, Autobahn. If you're into driving vehicles fast, you're into that.
Autobahn.
But it's a guide to birdfolk, and it's a really cool. What they've done is they have they have essentially homebrewed six different Arakocra tribes. Ooh. You've got the Penguin tribe. You've got the Ratite tribe. You've got the Hummingbird tribe, the Corvid tribe, the Owl tribe, the Waterfall tribe. And each comes with its own racial feats. Mm-hmm. So it expands on the overall base of the Arakocra and allows you to do a little bit more customization. Like the Penguin tribe has a racial feat of blubber. Your soft, blubbery body is perfect for keeping warm in cold temperatures. You have resistance to cold damage and advantage to saving throws related to frigid temperatures.
I like that. I really do.
Very cool.
Right?
The Owl tribe has a racial feat known as turning heads. You have a weirdly flexible neck. You can turn your head almost all the way around, granting you advantage on wisdom or perception rolls that require sight. Also a neat party trick. It also includes new weapons, like homebrew weapons that they could use.
Oh, I love those.
And like I said, if you want to play as an Arakocra and find the base options a little limiting, which they absolutely are, mm-hmm. something like this could go a long way into crafting a more customized character for you.
Yeah.
And like I said, this is also, it's the Autobahn's Guide to Arakocra Subraces. It's also 99 cents on the DMG. So again, it's a perfect mix of mm-hmm. all the things I love, like cool creative content at an affordable price. Yeah. Can't go wrong with that.
Can't go wrong with that one. Well, I do want to add one thing to our DMG corner.
A surprise entrance. A
surprise. So Stuart, whom we love.
Yes, we do love Stuart.
Previous host of the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast has sent us something that we made the fatal mistake of not mentioning last time. Do you remember what this is?
Yep.
Demon's Bane in the Bitter Peak. Yep. Yes.
Stuart has a lot of cool stuff going on right now.
Yes. Yes. Currently, he's working on something to increase accessibility to the D&D adventures that he's creating. So as we know, we'll let you know. I'm super excited to see this. I'm super excited to see this come out and work with it and everything else. But even more exciting, which I've already ordered, is his zombie campaign. It slipped my brain. I'm excited about it. Sergio, help me out.
What's so rotten about zombies? Yes. guarding
an ancient temple. Yes.
Yeah.
Guarding an ancient temple. I was like, I know it's what's so rotten about zombies. Yes. He has physical copies of this book for sale right now.
Yeah. Just brand new copies.
Yes. And you bet defending, your boy pre-order.
Defending an ancient temple, not guarding an ancient temple.
Yeah. Defending, temple. defending.
Yeah.
Yep. But yes, physical copies of it. And Sergio knows me. I love my physical copies of books.
As much as I enjoy being able to hold, thousands of pages worth of D&D information in the palm of my hand through a tablet. I mean, I love holding a physical copy of a book.
Mm-hmm.
I already have a copy of Wretched Wastelands, which is a game that Stuart had done before.
Yes. And I was really looking into that one, but I just, at the time, I couldn't afford to get it. I'm probably going to go back and get it.
Probably should, but yeah. What's So Rotten About Zombies Defending an Ancient Temple?
Yes.
Is available on exaltedfuneral.com.
Yep.
We'll include a link in the show notes, but you, mm-hmm. It's a super fun game. It's irreverent. It's a twist on the old trope of a party going into an ancient temple and having to fight zombies to get whatever treasure is hidden within. And it turns that on its head. Instead of the adventuring heroic campaign party, you are the zombies, like trying to keep them from mm-hmm. getting that aforementioned treasure.
Yes.
But yeah, he describes it as dark, grim, and probably goofy. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
Yes. So with all that being said, I think we should go back to starting to create our Kokra character.
Let's create a Birdman.
Woo! Let's transition. Let's go.
Out there, it's your bestest girl Rose coming at you from top of the world. Now it's time for your local traffic and weather. Welp, looks like almost everyone's still dead, so traffic is at a standstill. And now a word from our sponsor, because they're totally not bribing me with massive amounts of chems or anything. Seems as the stuffed shirts are back at the White Springs playing games with that total loser Modus. But hey, if that's your thing, whatever. So if all you squares wanted to hear more totally sort of, but maybe not boring stories about rebuilding Appalachia and being all goody-two-shoes, definitely not Raiders, check out this thing they call a podcast, The Modus Files, whatever that's supposed to be, on Spotify, iTunes, and wherever else you listen to those things. Double ugh, they're not paying me enough for this. Till later, this is Rose. Raiders rule!
All right, so there we are. We're back from the mid-break. It was a long one, but it was a lot of info and a lot of wonderful things.
A lot of cool stuff.
It was a lot of cool stuff. So let's get into creating an Arakocra character. Sergio, what do you got for us?
All right, so there are two paths you can take. One is, so in Tasha's Cauldron of Everything, there are options to customize your origins. And if you're going to go that route, then just about every single class is either fantastic or at least decent for an Arakocra.
Yeah.
Like you could be a bard, the songbird, or any spell casting class, mm-hmm. like the wizard, the sorcerer, the warlock.
Yep.
That's like, and like I said, if you're using the customize your origins option from Tasha's, then like I said, literally the eerie is your oyster.
The possibilities are endless.
Pretty much. Now if you're using just the base options, mm-hmm. you still got a lot of cool things that you could do, but it definitely like spell casting.
Yep.
You're pretty much just casting spells in the air, not really mm-hmm. too much beyond like, oh, I'm able to fly while doing this. But you could definitely a fighter or a ranger, like a fighter with an emphasis on ranged attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Melee attacks, because of your brittle bones, your tiny hollow brittle bones, because of that, a melee fighter probably isn't the best. And also, if you're in the air, like what, like unless you're fighting another, you know, in-flight character, like who are you slashing a sword against?
So I want to challenge you on this one.
Let's go. Come on. Come at me, bro.
So Sergio already hinted at this. And, you know, I like to min-max every once in a while.
Sure. Absolutely.
So monks, everyone overlooks a monk.
Mm-hmm.
Toasty already mentioned this. Monks can choose whether they use strength or dexterity as their stat of choice.
True.
You already get a +2 as an Arakocra.
Yep.
Now, I want you to picture this. A monk Arakocra that already has a D4 for talon damage runs up to you and will say that they're a level 6, which means they have to choose a path. Choose Way of the Fist. Now, this gives you additional damage. So yep. that 1d4 becomes a 1d6. Actually becomes a 1d6 just because you're a monk at 6th level. But you also get to use Key. Now, Key, the interesting yep. thing with Key is you're not really striking for the fact of damage. You're striking for the fact of implementing disadvantage to your opponent. and giving yourself a new approach to advantage. So you can use your ki for things like Stunning Strike, which Stunning Strike is terrible on its own. It basically stuns you. It's in the name. It stuns your character, or the opponent, I should say. Starting at fifth level, you can interfere with the flow of ki in your opponent's body. When you hit another creature with a melee weapon attack, or for the sake of monks, your fists are considered melee. They're considered all kinds of things. You can skin one ki point to attempt Stunning Strike. The target must succeed a Constitution saving throw or be stunned until the end of your next turn. Now think about that, because I've had this happen to me from a player. They've stunned my NPC. That means one whole turn I can do nothing. If they go first in combat order, I don't get to take a turn. If they just keep stunning striking you, that's all she wrote. And then, that's all she wrote.
If you've got another player character attacking that same NPC.
Yes. And that's the beautiful thing about making an Arakocra into a monk. You can choose strength or dex being your primary stat.
Yep.
And dex will play a part into a lot of your saving throws. So they also get evasion and things like this. But the cool part is, this is what I want you to think. You get to fly 50 feet.
I do.
Okay. What is stopping you from picking up a medium-sized creature, stunning striking them in the air, and then dropping them?
Well, you would have to do a grapple check.
Yes. But again, I have advantage on dexterity checks. So I can choose, instead of using a strength, I can choose to use grapple if I can justify it. Mm-hmm. I've had players justify this to me before. Well, my expertise in martial arts would be more dexterity based than strength based. Fair enough. Roll for me. You know. So let's say you do succeed your grapple, be it be strength or dexterity. You've got this guy in the air. You stunning strike him in midair and then drop him from 60, 70 feet. That's it. Game over.
Yeah, that's quite a terrible tumble for sure.
So you want to min max a character? I highly recommend going with monk. Now I can see where rangers would imply, you know, flying through the air, archery, you know, things like that. But monk is really where you would shine as a min maxed Arakocra because of that +2 dexterity.
I mean, I would argue that the airborne ranger would be your best min-max choice simply because ranged weapons use dexterity for their modifier rather than strength. Mm-hmm. And so you're just, you know, perched up somewhere firing off arrows at a high enough level, multiple arrows per attack. And what can they do? You know,
monks can throw missiles. They can use arrow. Oh, Sergio.
Missiles, you say?
Missiles, you say? Yes. Let me find it. You can use ki points to deflect missiles. Now, this is interesting because deflect missile isn't just deflecting. Starting at third level, you can use your reaction to deflect or catch missiles when you are hit by a ranged weapon attack. When you do so, the damage you take from the attack is reduced by 1d10 plus your dexterity modifier plus your monk level. If you reduce to zero, you can catch the missile, and if it's small enough to hold in your hand, you have at least one hand free, you can catch and spend one key to throw it back at the opponent. So essentially, I see what you're saying with archers and using that dexterity as a ranger. However, if you're in the sky and somebody, you have darts in your hand, you can use deflect missile to throw the dart at the same speed, if not maybe better, as a ranger could shoot those arrows. And if they're shooting at you at a distance, you can use deflect missile to deflect that attack right back at them.
Interesting. I never considered the deflect missile to be used to outright throw something.
Oh, yeah. It's like I said, if you want a min max, go with a monk. Min maxing with a monk can almost be done with any race, but it really shines with an Arakocra. As Toasty in chat has hinted at with his drunken monk. But at any rate.
Yeah, so there's a lot of cool stuff you can do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, monk, obviously. Oh. You know, a ranger.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah. A cleric. I mean, can you imagine healing from the heavens?
Exactly. And,
like, you'd never have to worry about our cleric going down because the cleric always stays up.
They're up in the sky. Nobody's going to mess with them.
And so you're up there just you know, sort of like you have a bird's eye view, ha ha ha, of, you know, who needs help. And you're throwing out, you know, cure wounds, cure light wounds, whatever you need to do to the entire party.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And see, that's why I said Arakocra is just like the monk class is for classes. Arakocra is that for a race. It really does meld well in almost any.
Yeah,
specialty.
Absolutely.
Almost any class. Healing from a distance, even further than most enemies can reach. It's wonderful. Like you said, your healing will never go down. It's fantastic.
And so, I mean, I could see why a bunch of DMs, why the AL have outright banned the race, because you could overpower it. It could be overpowered. At the same time, like, you know, as someone who has DM'd more than they've actually played, my method is not to like, oh, you can't use that. I want to be like, okay, you want to use that? Like, let's, you know, not make it to where you regret it, but, you know, you're not going to just get away with just anything. Like, oh, you're definitely going to have to earn all of what you're picking. And so, like, we've discussed, if, you know, with unique role playing choices and backstory ideas, rewarding that, like, we're also going to, a good DM will also challenge you.
Oh, yeah.
On choices that you make.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, we're coming towards the end, and you know what that means.
Magic item.
Bum, 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 bum. So, Sergio, I didn't bring one. I brought two because they're just that awesome.
You're too good to these people. You're too good to our listeners.
Don't get ahead of yourself here. So, our first magical item is, are you ready for this?
I am.
Adamantine wing shield.
Ooh.
Now, we'll talk about the good first. Now, with this good comes, you have additional armor class for your Arakocra. It is adamantine, so that means it's a lighter weight metal. It's not as heavy, nice, but it is durable. You could also replace adamantine with mithril, if you want to make argument's sake, because adamantine is a little bit heavier. But I digress. It's a little bit lighter weight, so our bird friends can carry it. However, it is still heavier than what they're used to.
Yeah.
So you will reduce your flight speed by half. Yes. However, you will increase your AC.
Is the juice worth the squeeze?
Yeah, that's what we're going to get to. You will increase your AC by +5.
Oh, that's that definitely would be worthwhile, I feel.
Yes. In addition to that, you will also be able to use an additional slashing attack with your wings that will deal 1d6 damage.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So if you are, so is it considered, what kind of armor is it considered? Is it light?
It is considered, for the sake of argument, light, so that our Arakocra friends can utilize it. Okay. But because it is made of a material of some substance, it still has to have that penalty of weight.
Right. So if you couldn't wear it as a monk, though.
Well, why not?
I thought monks had restrictions to what kind of armor they could. No, I'm thinking of a druid.
Yeah, you're thinking of druids. Monks can wear it, but monks typically get a better bonus based on their dexterity modifiers.
I'm thinking of druid not being able to wear not being able to wear like non-natural, like non-organic
material.
Right.
But I thought of our druid friends. This is why I brought a second item.
Yes.
Yes.
I love it.
So there's our first item. There's the good and the bad. You get this crazy attack. You get a crazy AC bonus, but you're losing half of your flight speed,
which is a big reason. A lot of I would argue that it's one of the, at least the big reason anyone would choose that race.
Oh, of course. So are you really willing to deduct yourself from that flight speed for that added bonuses? It's a it really fits our paladin friends more than anything, giving us that big boost so we can tank our way through things. But for our druid friends and those of us who want to stay on the lighter weight aside, I have added the black root talon.
Okay, I'm listening.
So these are caps that will go over the Arakokra's talons.
Like brass knuckles, but for talons.
But for talons, yes.
Hell yeah.
Yes. And they're made of black wood, which is some of the most sturdy wood in D&D.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that being said, they're sharpened to a unrealistic point.
Right.
That gives us a 1d8 claw attack damage. Instead,
as opposed to the 1d4.
Exactly. Now,
cool.
They're not that fantastic of items, so we don't really need a penalty. They're great for adding additional damage, but we don't really need a penalty. However, we will add a cost. These will probably averagely cost you right around 2,000 to 3,000 gold pieces.
Right.
Because it is very hard to acquire wood, and you have to find a craftsman for it.
Yep, I can understand that. I mean, it sounds like a mid-level, like anywhere from like 8 to 12, 12th level item for a character that, like it's on par with like being able to get a plus one, you know, great sword or a plus one, what have you. Like, yeah, I like it. I like it. It's one very, very fair. Both these items are very fair.
Very fair.
I like them. I like it a lot. You got a good mind for this stuff, kid. You got
homebrew, baby.
There's got to be a big old brain in that big old head for sure.
I don't know. Let me rattle it around a little bit. Let's find out.
Like a skip break big can.
Well, Sergio, before we end our show, is there anything you want to let our fans know about you're doing?
Yeah, just keep listening to the D&D Lorecast. We're here every week. We've got bonus episodes at least twice a month. If you want to keep listening to me talk, I also host Fandom University every other week where we talk about, thank you, any number of nerd things. We just finished up talking about the comic book writer Grant Morrison. And just in time for spooky season, we will be discussing a bunch of Halloween, Michael Myers, like Halloween.
Yes.
Michael Myers movie franchise, not just Halloween movies in general, but the actual like Halloween's 1, 2, H2O.
Yep.
The new ones that are the one that came out a couple years ago and the one that's coming out next month. Me and my co-host Sean Hamill will be talking about all that stuff, and we got a lot of cool stuff planned. They just dropped the Matrix 4 trailer, so come the end of the year, we'll be talking about the Matrix 2, and in between now and then, we'll also talk about the Eternals, which is the next big Marvel movie coming out. So
woo 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 woo,
very very cool stuff coming from our end.
Yeah, you got a lot of, and I will say, in all honesty, it is a good show. It really is nice deep dive into things. And you do really get to, you know, I remember when you guys did the Resident Evil, it was the first episode, first couple episodes. There was a really deep dive. And I, even hosting the Resident Evil Lorecast, I learned a few things from that. So it's if you're really interested in diving deep into that nerdom, definitely go check it out. It's a really good show for you. On my end.
Oh, my goodness. How much time do we got?
I know. So I also co-host the Resident Evil Lorecast.
As previously mentioned.
As previously mentioned multiple times. We've got that going. We have the Fumbling Four and the Almighty Crit, which is our homebrew D&D 5e podcast, where I DM a group of characters that...
And they are characters.
They are characters. Really like their tomfoolery. It's highly produced. It's got a lot of sound effects, music. It's I like it.
Top notch production.
We also have our Cyberpunk Red podcast, Cyberpunked, which is going pretty strong. It's I will say it's got a lot of good role play in it. A lot of good role playing. And then we have our Call of Cthulhu Mythos Mysteries 7th edition podcast, where we play Call of Cthulhu. We are actually ramping up for a surprise change of season, where we're going to dive into, drumroll please, Pulp Cthulhu.
Ooh.
Yes, we're going to be going in, we've decided that we're going to go with these seasons in order. So we're going to go pulp. Then we're probably going to go into like the 60s and 70s. So we're going to keep going and then we're going to wrap it back around with some extra special surprises. So wait for those.
Nice. So yeah, not one, not two, but three live playcasts. Nice. Yep.
And then coming November, fingers crossed, keep your calendars marked. We'll see how it goes. But we're going to be releasing the Avatar Legends TTRPG podcast. Yeah, that's a lot of stuff.
A lot of cool stuff.
And then for our fans here on the Dungeons and Dragons Lorecast, I'm going to be taking a couple days off in October, not from the podcast. Don't worry, we're still going to record.
Always recording.
But I'm going to take a couple days off of my normal day job so I can sit down and actually dedicate the time you guys deserve to an online merch store. And I'm going to customize a lot of merch. From hats, backpacks, t-shirts, I mean, you name it. I'm gonna sit down for a lengthy week and I'm going to design a lot of gear for everyone. So whatever you're into, whatever you're looking for, I'll have it for you.
Like, a lot of cool, like different D&D themed merch.
Yep.
Like the stickers that are in the sticker pack is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yes.
You know, like, the three stickers that we've designed, one of them has is a 20. It's a 20 sided die with a 20 and it says, "Damn, it feels good to be a gangster." The other one is a natural failure. It's a 20 sided die on a 1 and it says, "Well, never mind," which is something that I've said countless times after rolling a 1. I'd say like, "All right, I'm going to attack the kobold with my scimitar." Well, never mind.
Swing and a miss.
And then my personal favorite, which is the callback to the all the spells that are named after old school characters that Gary Gygax and his like kids would play.
Yeah,
it's like the design is the first time, and I've seen it several times throughout, but the first time I ever saw it was a Run DMC t-shirt that said Dre and Cube and Easy and Ren. And so what I did for this one, it says Melf and Tasha and Melf and Tasha and Tenser and Bigby.
And that's the same sort of design.
Yeah. And so like Tenser, I believe was Gygax's kid. Because I think their middle name is Ernest, right?
Yeah.
And he was Gary Gygax Jr. Gary Ernest Gygax Jr. And Tenser is just Ernest, like sort of mixed up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Tenser's, and so like it's like I always wondered the first time I ever opened up a D&D book, I always wondered like, who are these characters? It turns out that they're real people or characters played by real people.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, the only other thing I have to say before we decide to go is I want to give the patrons another thank you.
Because thank you so much.
All of this stuff, I mean, the merch, everything else, all of your patron funds, we're trying our best to pump right back into making everything better for you. We're taking the time to really, really listen. So if you guys have any input or things that you want to see, feel free to reach out to us on Patreon if you're a patron, or feel free to reach out to us in the Discord. Say, hey, I really, really want to see something like this. Or, hey, this sounds really cool. Look at this thing. You know, let us know. If it's in our power, we'll get it done. Don't be afraid to ask. You know, that's what we are here for. We are true diehard nerds of the D&D and our TTRPG franchises, period.
Yep.
And we really want to show support, show love, and give you some of the best content we can and give you some of the best materials we can. That's why we do this, because we love you. Plain and simple.
Can't get much more plain, can't get much more simple than that. Bingo. We love you guys. We love you all.
We do. So on that note, Sergio, I think it's time for us to depart.
I am going to go clean up some of this dragon poop from the tower.
Shh. All right. We'll see y'all.
Thanks for listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider sharing it with a friend, following us on Twitter at DNDLorecast, or jumping on the Robots Radio Discord to chat more with us about Dungeons & Dragons. We'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.
What up, Tonight City? You're listening to N54 Radio. This is DJ Sparks bringing you a new hit show from Night City, Cyberpunked, a Cyberpunk Red live play podcast. Listen as a ragtag group slamming on the corpos, survive the streets, and try to keep from being flatlined. You can tune in on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts. DJ Sparks out!
Long gone are the days where people sing about West Virginia as almost heaven. After nuclear war and disease, it's far from heaven now. Far From Heaven, a Fallout 76 story podcast, is a tale of survival, conflict, and hope set in the Fallout 76 game world. Join our survivors on their journey to reach that almost heaven once more. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, and many other great podcasts and apps. Far From Heaven. Fallout 76 story, available now.
Hi, I'm Fire Rider, and I'm the host of The Pixel People, a podcast dedicated to taking a close look at our favorite characters from our favorite video games. From major characters who define the course of a game's storyline, to smaller characters who you might have never noticed. Every week, we go beyond the quest line to examine a particular character's story arc and choices, and discover the real-world parallels and life lessons hidden just below the surface. I hope you'll join us. You can find The Pixel People on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else you listen to podcasts.